message for you.
You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. Midway is a film that is focusing on the Battle of Midway from World War II, which is, as Marco pointed out earlier, it's basically the sequel to Pearl Harbor in the sense, and I don't mean the movie Pearl Harbor. I mean, in terms of war movies go, if you make a movie about Pearl Harbor, this is the sequel to that movie.
Yeah, but this is like the new Terminator film in that, you know, even if you haven't seen the original, they show you enough up front. You're not lost. So you don't need to see Pearl Harbor to appreciate this movie.
I suppose one of the fears was Roland Emmerich, who is not known for films that are
good.
Well, I wasn't going to go that far, but I was going to say like restrained on any level. I was expecting something very much like Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor, but instead what he created was a film that was the World War II movies he probably grew up watching, like Tora 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 and stuff like that.
Yeah. And the original where Battle of Midway.
You know, there was one thing and it was bugging me and I was like, there's something that, because he's getting like every single detail in many ways of the genuine feel of those movies. I was like, there's something missing here and I can't put my finger on it. On my way home, I figured it out. Nobody had a mid-Atlantic accent, which isn't a real accent. It was invented for the
actually,
movies. But
nobody in the movie actually served in World War II, which was the big difference in all those great World War II movies, because half those guys had actually been in the war.
Right.
You know, which is why Hollywood had that great golden era of World War II films, because all those guys came back, and this movie even does a little nod of the hat there to Hollywood.
Well,
with a little John Ford.
I mean, he definitely double underlines, I'm trying to make a movie like those movies by having John Ford actually be a character in the movie.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I get it. Keep going.
It's a charmingly retro movie.
Before we go any farther, I am Chris.
I'm Marco.
Marcos, it just kind of throws me off.
Marco, from now on, you're M Dog.
That works.
All right, M Dog.
And I'm Michael.
Can I call you M Dog Shyamalan?
No, you may not. Not unless Michael Spider Mike is here, and then you can do that. But yeah, I mean, I was honestly kind of surprised that this is the movie that Emmerich wanted to make, but I got to say, it's. In many ways, I found that a pleasant surprise, which is certainly not like in and of itself, like me saying that's what makes this movie good or bad or whatever. It's just I was expecting just overwrought garbage. And instead,
you were expecting Pearl Harbor.
I was expecting Pearl Harbor. Yeah. And what we got was something that was like watching one of those old movies.
It's a classical, it's a sort of classist style. And the thing is, he's kind of done this with The Patriot. I mean, which was the Revolutionary War film. With Mel Gibson and Heath Ledger. But, you know, yeah, he's normally a purveyor of cinematic cheese. His masterpiece to this day is and always will be Independence Day, which is where he finally found that right formula of, like, jingoistic fervor and high concept.
That's his best move.
But he can't hide behind that when you're doing a movie about Midway. And so I did appreciate that he toned down some of the cheese factor, even though he embraced all of the tropes of those old movies.
I mean, sometimes too, like,
there was still a little bit of cheese in there.
I mean, some
degree
to the detriment of the film as watching it as a modern watcher.
Yeah.
But when I started to figure out, he's really trying to make a simulation of those movies down to, like, eye rolling's not right, but that type of dialogue from those films that are very, like, kind of ridiculously over patriotic or over heroic, and the actors having these very bigger than life, overwrought performances
personalities.
I'm like, but all of that didn't feel modern, it all felt old fashioned, and I was like, who are you making this movie for? I was like, oh, well, anyone's grandfather who's still alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Boomer.
If your grandpa ever sat on the couch, cracked open a can of Schlitz, and just watched a TNT World War II Veterans Day movie marathon, he's going to love this fucking movie, except he's probably dead.
Oh, hell, I do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do it too. But again, it
okay,
is...
Okay, Grandpa.
But Chris is right. It is kind of jarring to see these modern-day actors and all of this, these modern-day effects in what's essentially a retro throwback.
So it would be impossible to go down this really actually somewhat sizable list of stars in this yeah. movie, although most are sort of mid-range stars, mid to B to C-list stars, or up-and-comers, I suppose, some
good
of them.
Mix.
But like a lot of people here, are like there's so many that you're like, it's just not really worth describing what their position was in this movie because they really only... We're there for a few key scenes, but what we're really following is Ed Skrein. I don't know.
That guy who looks like Nicholas Holt, but isn't.
Playing the guy with the most seemingly made-up name of all time that isn't, Richard Dick Best.
You know? That's a good World War II era name, man.
Yeah, right? Who is a who's a fighter pilot. He's a, as they say, he's a cowboy.
Yeah.
You know, he's that guy. He's
by
the
way of
wild
Brooklyn.
Man. He's Maverick!
He's the Maverick.
He's the Maverick, yeah. And who always does... manages to like succeed, but it makes everyone else very nervous, not the least of which is his lieutenant commander, played by Luke Evans, who there's sort of a, I wouldn't go so far as say antagonistic, but very uncomfortable relationship between the two of them. He's like, you can't keep acting like that, you dangerous Maverick.
You know, Luke Evans with a mustache looks oddly like a younger Michael Shannon. That was throwing me off too. I mean, again, it's modern day faces, and if you look at those old movies, those guys just had different faces.
It's true,
you know, and it throws you off. Way. They weren't as pretty as these guys are, you know. Robert Mitchum wouldn't be an actor today.
Yeah, but Dennis Quaid is in this, and he's melting or something.
Well, Dennis Quaid was beautiful when he was younger, but now you can literally see his skin peeling off, which I imagine he's just going to, like a snake, rip it off, and he's going to reveal himself to be the new Tommy Lee Jones.
It seems like that
because somebody needs to be the new Tommy Lee Jones
or Nick Nolte.
Or Nick Nolte. He's somewhere between, yeah.
This movie
Nick Nolte.
Sounded like him. He's like, oh, God.
At first,
God,
I thought it was an acting choice, but boy, I think he's had too many cigarettes.
But he's not even one of the main characters here. I would say the other two people who are an important arc is, who doesn't even come until a little later in the film, Woody Harrelson is an Admiral Chester Nimitz, who has been basically assigned, despite the fact this is the worst job you could possibly have, being in charge of the post Pearl Harbor
Pacific Fleet.
Left of it. Yeah, exactly. And then Patrick Wilson playing a information head of information, who is the one guy who warned them. Yeah. I think the Japanese
analyst.
Are going to attack Pearl Harbor. Yeah. They didn't listen. That happened, and now everyone's like, well, we fucked up, should have listened to you. So Woody Harrelson comes in, and he's like, I'm listening, what do you got for me?
Yeah.
And him basically trying to piece together information from what they could, and him saying all this leading up to what ended up being this decisive Pacific battle, the Battle of Midway, which we literally won by the skin of our teeth.
And that's one of the things that I did appreciate about it, about its historicity.
Historicity.
Historicalness.
That's a great sauce you can get on your burger now.
Historicity.
Is that they did bring in how this wasn't just airplanes and bombs. It was really about intelligence.
And we just barely
won it. And without the intelligence, we wouldn't have.
Well, right. I always like to say, what was it? Like, Alan Turing was the guy who won World War II.
Right.
Like, because he's the one who figured out the Enigma codes, and there's like example after example after example of decisive moment that was because we secretly understood, thanks to him, what the Enigma codes were, how to decipher it. You're like, yeah, Alan Turing, a gay autistic nerd won World War II.
Nice. And we thanked him.
Yes. Yeah, so we put him in a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. This movie definitely spends its time trying to look at all these different fronts and how everything kind of came together to, and a lot of luck. Holy shit, a lot of luck.
Oh yeah.
In which I don't even mean the Hollywood luck. I mean like in real, that battle was like one of those. What slightest thing could have gone differently and we would have lost.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things I was thinking about is how they did try and piece all of this stuff together. And I thought this would have made an outstanding miniseries.
Mm-hmm. Sure, well, they did. It's called The Pacific.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
It's really good.
I haven't seen that yet. But
it's Band of Brothers Part 2, basically.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, just this battle. I mean, from Pearl Harbor right up to the thing in the Coral Sea that that weaken the Japanese just enough.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and all the stories of the individual people. It's like there's so much in here that that they had to skim through because they had to squeeze it into
About 6 months of movie time squeezed into 2 hours and 20 minutes.
He's really trying to, like, make you understand all the, like, how everything came together and how, skinnier teeth it really was at the end. Mm-hmm. And I think on the whole, he does a good job doing that, but it's because of the fact it's a movie and 138 minutes, mind you, of movie, but still it really is just constant titles on screen. Like now they're here and now they're here.
It's Pearl Harbor. Basically, this is the Wikipedia version of the Pacific Theater.
Yes.
It starts off with Pearl Harbor. You see what the stakes are. You see how we got caught with our pants down. Then there's the Marshall Islands. Then there's the Doolittle Raid. Then there's that little excursion into the Coral Sea. And then finally, of course, into like the last 20, 30 minutes is the Battle of Midway, where everything comes into play. Planes, bombers, submarines, and
and
apparently the way to sink anything is you just fly straight at it and just pray you don't get shot until you drop a bomb on it.
I mean,
I don't know how those guys didn't get shot down.
You're the more the expert, on this sure thing.
Yeah, and a lot of them did get shot down. A lot of them missed.
Yeah.
That they showed with the torpedo hitting the Japanese ship and just going boom.
Yeah,
was something that they really had a problem with. At the beginning of the war, our torpedoes didn't work with a goddamn.
They referenced that. They're like, we're not doing these torpedoes anymore. They suck.
As the thing, like, when you're doing that, you're dive bombing a ship. There's hundreds of fucking guns, anti-aircraft guns firing you, and you're heading right at them. And most of your planes around you are getting shot down. And you've got to be a certain, because it's just pure luck. If you wait, if you don't wait till you get certain close enough to know that you're going to hit it. Like, most of those bombs are missing. It's a narrow target all from 4,000 feet in the air.
And it's moving.
It's moving.
Because they're trying not to get hit.
And I feel like all that was represented. I can't believe we're talking about a Roland Emmerich film here.
I know, but I was really surprised.
You know what actually helps put me a lot of care into trying to capture all these elements and make them where, like, that's how it really was. I was expecting nonstop silliness of like, of impossible heroics.
This is not the silliness of Independence Day, even though it has some of that. Could have
used Bill Pullman giving a speech.
You know, you got Woody Harrelson giving some speeches. You know, everybody gave a little speech, just not one big one. You know, I keep thinking to myself. Did you ever play 1942 when you were a kid? That old Capcom game?
Of course. I still play it on my phone.
Which is a great game, but, I wish it was Bally Midway Arcade Company that had made it, because then that would make this the best video game adaptation of the year. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
No.
Because that, I would believe, is a Roland Emmerich film, a video game adaptation of World War II.
It would be hysterical if we had to hand Emmerich the award for best video game movie.
Yeah. We're like,
here. Fine. Take it. We all agree. Now shut up about it already.
You crossed a very, very low bar. Congratulations.
But the fact that I have to say that Emmerich made one of the most realistic World War II films in like 20 years, I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe we have to actually say this.
But it's no Saving Private Ryan.
Well, no, it's not.
Which is the last really great World War II movie.
Because it's nowhere near as well made a movie as that.
No, it's not.
Like, that's the thing, is that even though this has got all this realism that's there, it's like trying so hard to represent this period in film, and it's doing all that exactly the way he wants to. He's still not a particularly great director, or especially not with actors. And the acting is just kind of all over the place here. Yeah. I mean, like, some of it's good, some of it's pretty goddamn bad, especially Ed Skrein, whatever.
Is
just
hated that
ridiculous. Character. Who's the main character, and he is just this heavy accent, and he's just over the top. And
you mean
like
Bugs Bunny doing a Robert De Niro accent?
Yeah,
work
it's
for you?
Ridiculous.
It's like, hey, Doc, you're talking to me.
And the movie's got so many characters, over like three quarters of which are just there as little mini data dumps in there.
Yeah.
But they spend too much time with the wives are in this, and they have literally nothing to do in this film and add up to nothing in the storyline other than a bit of background color for our male characters. I mean, Saving Private Ryan really felt emotionally it had stakes. I never felt emotional stakes here, at all on any level or connected to any of these people. But I was like, I think somebody said earlier, it's like the Wikipedia article about Midway made into a movie, and it's really interesting, but it's not compelling.
So I had that problem too, and it's actually really funny because every pilot is more interesting, almost any of them. In the background, even the dude that is there for one scene and dies, like, yeah, they're all more interesting than the lead actor.
Yeah. Oh, all of them, yeah. Even yeah. Fucking Nick Jonas is more interesting, who's got a role as another cocky, like a pilot guy. He's more interesting than the lead, because you're just like, oh, for God's sake, shut up. I mean, because the lead is the least realistic character here, too. Yeah. Like, he's the one they're trying to make the absurd Tom Cruise as Maverick lead, and you're always going... Yeah, okay. I mean, I suspect a lot of this was the most highly exaggerated part of the film.
But
yeah,
you did see the little credit, though, at the end, where he was decorated and for his bravery and valor and utter lack of regard for his own safety. I mean, that was what they cited. I'm like, it was one of those, like, you're a maniac, but that's kind of what we needed to get this done, because only a maniac would fly through anti-aircraft fire on purpose.
They should have played that song while he was diving.
Yeah. Maniac, Highway to the Danger Zone.
Maniac.
Everyone in this movie is a maverick. Woody Harrelson is a maverick. Yeah. The Codebreaker is a maverick. The pilots
that's
are maverick.
True. You're like, not wrong.
There's not one person that's like, oh yeah, we need to do this by the... I mean, on the Japanese side there is, but that's why they lose.
Well, I did like that, and you bring up Japanese side, which I think is good, because this is trying to do a thing that you almost never see with this kind of film. The only other one I think of actively is Tora Tora Tora, where they represent the Japanese as not mustache twirling bad guys, which is weird because this was co-financed by the Chinese.
Yeah.
And half the movies they put out in the last 10 years represent the Japanese as mustache twirling bad
Japanese
guys.
Navy, I mean, by law, their rules were you had to be clean shaven, so they couldn't really twirl their mustaches.
But there is a guy who is kind of the, they're kind of putting out as like almost kind of an equivalent to a combination of like Patrick Wilson and Woody Harrelson's character. He's like sort of like the Japanese other side, where he's the very smart kind of reasonable
Yamamoto.
Who is like, I kind of wanted to see more about that guy in this
film.
He
was a badass. He was a Harvard-educated naval officer, and he has one of the most famous lines of the war. It's like, you've unleashed a sleeping, or you've awakened a sleeping giant,
and with a terrible resolve.
And we have that
which
brief
is a great
moment
line.
Where he knows the Patrick Wilson character, and they have a rapport, and, you know, that's why he gets, he's basically the guy from Hunt for Red October. He's the Jack Ryan. He's like, you know this guy. You know how he thinks.
Yeah.
Tell us what he's going to do. And he kind of calls it.
And that's why I thought it would have done so well as a miniseries, because I wanted to see more of Yamamoto.
I
wanted to see more of...
He's a fascinating person, no question. And the movie sets him up to be so interesting. And then we get just enough to feel like... Okay, so they really want to make clear these guys' own sort of humanity and their own fears and everything, but not enough where they feel like real characters.
Right.
But I suppose you could kind of say that on some level of all the characters in this film.
Everybody.
Yeah, but, you know, because it is a Chinese co-production, you do have to have a scene where the Japanese are just dicks.
Yeah.
They're like, we'll give you the money, and it's fine, you can treat them as human beings, but we just need to see them killing a bunch of innocent Chinese so people know how awful they were.
But in China... They were absolute dicks.
Oh, they were. That is the thing. That was like the stipulation. You could almost read it in the contract. They're like, but you have to include this scene.
Yeah, read about the rape of Nanking.
Yeah.
And if you ever had any mixed feelings about the Japanese not being dicks during that 100 years or so, you'll change your mind real fast.
Or their treatment of American prisoners.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what we want to know or we'll kill you.
Because we treated Japanese prisoners in our own country so great.
So I'm not super familiar with the history or even the last movie. Mm-hmm. I thought that dude was going to be the main antagonist. Like, at a certain point, he's like, oh, okay, I am the guy that's going to be on the other side. And then he doesn't do anything. Like, he's just like, oh, I'm giving you guys warnings that no one's listened to. Like, that's his role, kind of.
Right. Well,
just
like...
Woody Harrelson character. Yeah. Woody Harrelson slash Patrick Wilson. It's like, they're the two guys in the office back at home going, I need you guys to do this.
And that's the thing, is like, Emmerich strangely is not making a movie, despite some heightened sort of like a cowboy characters. He's not making a movie about good versus evil like every other movie he's ever made.
Yeah.
He's making one that's really like about playing a Midway strategy, like huge table board game.
I see what you did there. Midway?
Yeah.
Well done, sir.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, he's like, I'm much more interested with the way this all played out than I am with trying to make this into Pearl Harbor, like a Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor film. Yeah. And I'd rather watch this any day that over what Michael Bay did. But at the same time, will I though? 138 minutes is a long time to sit through this when there's huge sections that there's outside of, yes, that actually happened, but in telling a narrative, there's no real reason to have it here that could have been cut out of here in media entirely. Like Aaron Eckhart is in here as a guy.
The Doolittle raid.
But you could have cut that out of this movie entirely and it would not have hurt the film.
I think they were trying to hit all the major battles, all the major incidents leading up to Midway. And that's kind of where, that's the tit for tat that's going on. Like, you fucked us over with Pearl Harbor. We're going to go and bomb Tokyo. No one has ever attacked Tokyo successfully. And then I'm like, oh, you did that? Well, except now we're going to do this. And Godzilla. Well, you know, because that's the real problem. Godzilla slept through World War II. He sat it out. And, you know, really, thank God. Because if, you know.
I guess the idea is there was no Godzilla till the atom bomb.
Until the atom bomb. Yeah, we kind of made that happen. You know.
We fucked up. That's our bad, guys. Yes. Sorry. Like, don't send them here. No. We're not that sorry.
No, but in
I mean, Elmerich did send him to New York.
He did.
There you go. Oh, God.
And he couldn't even take out Matthew Broderick.
Oh,
what
shit
is wrong with you?
That makes Midway the prequel film to the Roland Emmerich Godzilla.
Oh no!
Oh my shit! Oh shit! We have like an Emmerich verse now.
Emmerich verse. And then where does that Shakespeare film fit in that history? Is that like Godzilla Zero?
500 years prior.
Okay. All right. Let's go to final thoughts, Marco. Marco, okay. Get us started.
All right. So Marco Prime. That's what I'll be known
as. Oh, geez.
No. Well, just the first one to get here. It's nothing special about me. I was just here first. Not tonight. That's true. I got lost. Missed my exit. Anyway, this is, as I said earlier, it is a fun retro throwback. This is, your grandpa would love this movie. It's trying so hard to replicate the tone of those old classic Hollywood World War II movies. Everything from, you know, Guns of Navarone to Tora, 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 and so on and so forth. If you like those movies, you'll like this. If you actually like Roland Emmerich's, like, blockbuster cheese balls that he tends to do,
this may not be for you.
This might actually be two more nuances. This is like a second grade class of, like, cheese. It's like, it's not Velveeta, but it ain't the good stuff either. It's just got a little bit more nuance.
It's like those really thick slices of American cheese they sell that are actually kind of good. You're like, ooh,
they're kind of good,
bad.
But they also are a little sweaty. You know,
it's a kind, that doesn't have their own plastic wrapper for each one. You know? They're just stacked, and you're like, oh, that's not
right.
Bad.
It's like it's the big block of cheese you have to slice yourself. Yeah. It doesn't come in prepackaged singles. But
God,
yeah, it just kind of just goes through these beats one by one by one.
Really fast.
Very, very quickly. And I think he actually manages to do what, yes, it is the Wikipedia version of the Pacific Theater, but it's a credible version of that. It's like, all right, here's the bullet points. And you're never lost. You're never confused. You know what the stakes are. You know where everyone's at. And on that level, I can appreciate it. But yeah, like Chris said, I don't think I'm going to revisit it. But if it's on TV late at night one night and I'm just in the mood for an old World War II throwback movie, yeah, I might watch this. I give this 6.5 out of 10 bunny slippers.
M-Dog?
So this movie is not exactly my cup of tea. For the most part, I see this as kind of a genre like Westerns in a way that it's like it's kind of dead, but we still get one every other year sometimes. But for what this is, I mean, it's a really good movie. There's only a couple, they could cut out just a couple characters, just more streamline the plot, and then it would be a little bit better. But I mean, for what it is, I like it. I'd probably give it 3 out of 5 paps with Grandpa.
Michael?
Yeah, I think, I was pleasantly surprised. I expected just an excuse to go from one explosion to the next, and this was actually a story. And I think he really successfully did what he set out to do, which was tell this story in a sort of a classic movie kind of way. And I think it really works like that. Is it a great movie? No. But again, it, you know, if it shows up on, you know, movie of the week, or if I'm bored, you know, some night and watching Netflix,
oh, hell, why not?
I could see myself watching it again. I would give this, you know, 6.5 dud torpedoes out of 10.
Yeah, I one thing we haven't really talked about, which is that the actual dogfighting action sequences are pretty cool.
Yeah.
They look neat, and especially when it gets to the actual Battle of Midway, there is a definite amount of tenseness that he manages to create sheerly because we've already established how fucking hard it is to successfully do what they're trying to do. Like, drop the bombs on the ships, and how much, if they don't get this exactly right, the whole thing is fucked.
Right.
And it actually had me kind of like, okay, I was perked up in my chair going, wow. And that's like a good 35 minutes or so of the film of watching this play out. And I was like, okay, this movie has raised in my estimation because it's very talky for a lot of it, but it's also going, shut, conversation here, now it's over there, now it's here, and wait, oh, there's a dogfight about something, don't worry about it, now more conversation. Mm-hmm. This is like 35 straight minutes of like, wow, this is really tense and like shit that almost didn't work out, and I really liked it. The CG is, a mixed bag is too mixed. Cruel because most of it is fine. Every once in a while, there's something you're like, yeah, that didn't look good
at all. He didn't have the Michael Bay budget.
No,
he
did not. So it wasn't just me who saw those, the couple of those shots.
Yeah, there's points you're like, okay, that did not look great. That was not fire. But it's all passable.
Yeah, CG, you know what I mean? But you can still see the strings on the plane sometimes.
I mean, one of the worst effects was the scene where a guy has his, like, there's some fire lightly burning on his legs.
That one. Oh,
and
God.
I was like, that was egregiously bad. And
I know that effects package. I've used it.
Yeah, exactly. That was like really generic effects package stuff. Yeah. But, I mean, this is what it is. I think we're all more or less on the same page here. This is exactly what it wants to be. And maybe you're that person who you're the right audience for. I can't imagine.
My mom would love this.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know a lot of people, if my dad was still alive, he would have loved the shit out of this movie. As it is for me, I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's almost too slavish to, it's almost satirically slavish to the films it's trying to be, just like with the acting and the dialogue.
You were too slavish to the past.
Yeah, no.
Like, did you want like aliens to show up?
No, but you know, well, I did.
Twist.
I did, in fact, want aliens and Godzilla to show up. I would have, if that had happened, I would have stood up in my chair and been like, yes.
Imagine that's the third act reveal. You just hear the Godzilla scream, and everyone on the boats, the Japanese and the Americans, turn around like, what the fuck is that?
Somewhere at home, Matt Frank tilts his head and goes,
he just had a chubby right now. Now, you know,
the teasers, the aliens from Independence Day are watching the whole thing.
Yeah,
it's the battleship movie we should have gotten.
But it's definitely the battleship movie we should have gotten, because that movie is a piece of shit.
Yeah,
but this is not strangely not a piece of shit. It's a generally enjoyable film that I wish was either much longer, like you said, like a miniseries, mm-hmm. or about 40 minutes shorter, which I think they easily could have made it 40 minutes shorter, and it would have been a tighter, much more entertaining film. But I think that this, if you even faintly like this type of war film, absolutely go check it out. If this sounds really dull to you, it's going to be. Don't go see it. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. Jonas Brothers, I wish, had also been in here so they could have been killed. Why's Nick got to be the only one? Other guys are like, what the fuck, dude? There is, in fact, if you're more interested in the Jonas Brothers, there's a documentary coming out about how they all hated him for becoming more famous than them, but now they're friends again.
Oh.
We're not reviewing that one.